The land down under has never been easier to reach. United Airlines has more flights between the U.S. and Australia than any other U.S. airline, so you can fly nonstop to destinations like Sydney, Melbourne, and Brisbane. Explore dazzling cities, savor the very best of Aussie cuisine, and get up close and personal with the wildlife. Who doesn't want to hold a koala? Go to united.com/Australia to book your adventure.
Maybe it's just that you don't know how to use social courtesy.
Oh, that's old-fashioned.
Watch how
Lizzie Post
and Dan Post-Senate
act as host and hostess. They know that courtesy means showing respect, thinking of the other person, real friendliness.
Hello.
And welcome to Awesome Etiquette,
where we explore modern etiquette through the lens of consideration, respect, and honesty.
On today's show, we take your questions on really uneven graduation gifts, when to put a rolled napkin on your lap, and how to respond when people ask if you want kids. For community members, your question of the week is about what to do with a friend who won't take no for an answer about staying on your couch.
Plus your etiquette salute and another feedback postscript segment.
All that's coming up.
Awesome Etiquette comes to you from the studios of our home offices in Vermont and is proud to be produced by the Emily Post Institute. I'm Dan Post-Senning.
And I'm Lizzie Post. Hey, cuz.
Good afternoon, Lizzie Post.
It is a good afternoon. Do you want to know why?
I want to know all the reasons.
I am so excited, cousin. I am going to go see Taylor Swift on my birthday.
It's all happening.
I can't contain it. It was a wonderful, wonderful surprise. I am beyond excited and I am just like beaming ear to ear. I couldn't keep it out of this intro. I got a whole other story to tell for the intro. That's actually like kind of cool. But I am beaming ear to ear. This has just happened and I got one ticket on my birthday. I'm doing it. I'm going. I got to figure out the rest of the logistics now, but like it really happened and I am blown away. So I am very happy to be sitting here at the mic with you.
Lizzie Post, I am happy
I'd be
for
happy
you.
No matter what was going on.
And I have to tell everyone who's listening that my 7-year-old Anisha is so happy for you. She has been invested in getting Lizzie Post to see Taylor Swift on her birthday. And
she told Dan to buy me a ticket. Sorry. It was the sweetest thing. Like, I'm not laughing at her. I'm laughing at you, sort of.
She
Sorry.
Was trying to figure out how to make it happen. She wanted to know if it was possible.
I told you what was that for your child makes me feel like such a seen person in the world. Like, and this is not the only time. Like, there have been a lot of times, but I was telling you that it really warmed my heart whenever you tell me something like this, because I'm a real person to her, like who has
no
like
question.
Goals and dreams and things, like mm-hmm. not just a voice that daddy talks to regularly, especially when, you know, I want his phone. It's like, you know, it's like, it really is. Your daughter has a way of really making people feel seen at such a young age. And the impact is real.
Well, she hits her etiquette marks. She likes to craft you a Christmas present, and she thinks about your birthday, and she wants that to be special.
I know. It's been really sweet.
Well, she will be excited. What you told me, the first thought I had was, I can't wait to get home and tell Anisha.
Totally.
But you kind of teased us a little bit. What was the story that's on hold while we
get
the important news first?
I want to like thank our audience for just indulging the raging Swiftie in me for whom this has been like a thing, and also just for indulging listening to like a dream come true moment for me. I really appreciate it. And probably wouldn't have been able to get through the episode having had it just happen without mentioning it. But the story was that, and I forgot to share it last week when we were recording in the intro, that at the family reunion, a neighbor of ours, Dan, when we had the when our families owned the Emily Post house, there was a house directly behind it that a lovely family, the Cole family, owned. And I know her as the grandmother of that family. I babysat her grandkids quite a lot when they were young. They're like married now, but it's they were really cute, really great kids, really fun family to have living right behind you. And Mrs. Cole told me she was at the reunion, because Vineyard's a small place and a lot of people know each other. And she was at the reunion and she told me, oh, my mother used to tell me stories about Emily. She would say that Emily would cry out, Sylvia, can you come do my zipper? And it just cracked me up as soon as I heard it. I was like, A, I have never heard this one before. And B, that is such a delightful, like, your neighbor is Emily Post, who I learned from my mom's side of the family who lived across the street. Emily was a very loud snorer, and you could hear her up and down Fuller Street. Yes, yes, yes. And then the second is that she would call out to the neighbor to come help her with her dress. I mean, just Sylvia. Could you imagine if that was your Emma, Sylvia? If that was your Emma, like your version of Emily Post, when like the rest of the world's version of her is the fork is on the left and lift the stemware like this, like just it really cracked me up.
I'm loving that you captured just a bit of the tone of her voice. We've heard those recordings of her, and she has that
sing-songy,
sort of delicious sing-songy 100-year-old East Coast Atlantic accent. And it's just nice to hear it given voice and be fully embodied in her great-great-granddaughter, Lizzie Post.
We'll start coaching Anisha so she can do the impressions next.
Sylvia!
Sylvia! Anyway, we do have a great show for you today that has nothing to do with Taylor Swift or funny voices. But we do have another, it's like time already for another feedback postscript segment, which I'm very excited about. And we have a salute from listener Gonzalo, one of the standouts for me over the years. And we also will be giving out the etiquette challenge of the week. But first, Dan, do you think we should get to some questions?
Let's do it.
There's no show without you, and you can add to the awesomeness by sending in your etiquette questions. Just email us at ae@emilypost.com or leave a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463. On Substack, you can post your question in the comment thread of our Monday podcast post. Simply go to emilypost.substack.com. You can also DM us on Instagram. We are at Emily Post Institute.
Support for today's episode comes from OneSkin.
Dan, I'm so glad they've stuck with us. I converted. Like, this is my product now. It is my everyday moisturizer because it's so stinking easy. And it's not stinking. It smells great. But it really is easy. And I believe the science behind the product. So I ended up subscribing so that I could get it on a regular basis. If you want smart, easy skincare, I think OneSkin is the solution.
And if you have sensitive skin, you're going to want to hear about OneSkin's scientifically proven topical supplements, free from over 1,500 chemicals and preservatives that can make skin red, irritated, or itchy. Their products are safe for sensitive skin. It's just one of the reasons they've earned the Skin Safe Seal of Approval.
For a limited time, you can try OneSkin for 15% off using the code MANNERS, that's MANNERS with an S, when you check out at oneskin.co. Give your skin the scientifically proven gentle care it deserves with OneSkin.
Leveraging their in-house cutting-edge R&D platform, they were able to measure the efficacy of age-reversal molecules in their lab. By staining skin samples in the lab for senescent cells and analyzing changes to the skin's genetic data before and after exposure to the OS01 peptide, OneSkin scientists found that the OS01 peptide reverses skin's biological age by reducing the number of senescent cells by up to 50%.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using the code MANNERS at oneskin.co. That's 15% off at oneskin.co with the code MANNERS. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support this show and tell them we sent you.
Now back to Awesome Etiquette. Our first question this week is deliciously titled, Bread vs. Bread in Graduation Gifts.
I'm so curious.
Hello. My twin boys graduated from high school last week. Congratulations.
Yeah.
In which their aunt, uncle, and cousin attended the graduation ceremony. Then, the following week, their cousin graduated from high school, and we attended her graduation ceremony. Our two families decided to get together for a family dinner the following weekend to celebrate the graduates. We gave our niece a card and homemade cheese sourdough bread that I made. Note, she loves this bread. And our twin boys received $50 each and a gift certificate to go bowling from their aunt, uncle, and cousin. My husband and I felt awful when we saw the very generous gift our boys received and felt like we didn't give our niece an appropriate gift. We thanked them for their generosity and left it at that. Please advise how we should handle this situation after the fact. We would like to give her another gift to be in line with what our boys received. Thoughts? Thank you, Denise.
This is such an awesome question to get to answer, Dan. This is all the yays. And I don't mean that from like a more gifts is always better. It's just, I love that their gift inspired you. I hope it's coming from a place of inspiration, not a place of guilt, because any gift that you gave her, especially one that was thoughtful to things that she really loves and appreciates, that was personal to her or to your relationship together, is going to be enough and going to be wonderful. I just want to just say that flat out. You have nothing else to do here. You have been great aunts and uncles in this situation. But I love the idea that seeing what your sister-in-law or brother, or I forget how the relationships go, did for your boys inspired you to want to do more. And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. And that getting a second gift, if you're like, boy, you know, we also want to do this. And I think presenting it that way is fine. Like, Kelsey, we were thinking about you and you're graduating and everything. And we wanted to do a little bit more. So we got this for you as well. And we really hope you enjoy it. You did a great job, honey. Something like that. I think it would feel so heartfelt and genuine. At least that's the way I read the situation.
I am so glad you read it that way, Lizzie Post, because I had the exact same thought. I said to myself, this is not a tit for tat. You don't need to match out or even out gifts. That's not required. In fact, it sort of runs counter to what should be the idea. It's okay if you don't do anything at this point. And like you, Lizzie Post, I was thinking, if the spirit is one of generosity and it comes from genuine inspiration, it's not a feeling of oh, I'm bad, I need to meet this, or I haven't done enough. If it really is just that was so nice, I want to do something so nice, I think you can do it. And I was trying to imagine, there's no etiquette that I could think of that I can refer to on how to do that well, but I was trying to imagine a scenario where that wouldn't land well. And I was having a hard time doing it. And in fact, I even recently had an experience where I was on the receiving end of a kind of makeup late gift, and I just loved it. I thought it was so kind and so thoughtful, and it was such an awesome gift. It made it extra nice.
Yeah. I think the only way that it would be inappropriate is if you said, your parents gave our kids way more than we gave you, so we wanted to make it even. I think that would be the thing I would not do, because I'm hoping that's not the sentiment it's coming from, that it really is more just like, we saw this, and it did look so nice, and it was so meaningful. And we, like, it's not that we devalue what we did, but we are inspired by it to do a little something more or something in addition to what we've already done.
In the spirit of what was already done being awesome, I'm wondering if that bread recipe is proprietary.
I am too. Cheese.
What's the etiquette on asking someone to share a recipe via podcast?
Just ask. They can always say no.
I mean, at some point, we're going to run out of Emily Post cookbook recipes. Maybe we can start feeding in recipes for Medicaid questions.
maybe. Well, Denise, thank you so much for the question. We certainly hope that our answer helps, however you end up proceeding.
Whole grain breads, like whole wheat and rye, are especially good for you. If you do eat white bread, make sure it's enriched. Enriched bread has vitamins added to it.
Our next question is titled, Rolled Napkin Etiquette. Hello, Lizzie and Dan. I know it's proper etiquette to put your napkin in your lap after being seated for dining, or to follow your host's lead. But could this advice change with a napkin-wrapped silverware roll? For example, if dining at a casual patio table, I'd rather unwrap my roll after receiving my plate so I don't have to rest my silverware on the table. Thanks for all of your insight each week. Anonymous, this is a great question.
This is such a great question. Anonymous, I am calling you my new favorite Anonymous. You got us a table manners question and one that we haven't tackled
yet. I was thinking, I don't think this is in the book either. We didn't put this in the business book under casual dining.
No, and I have talked about this exact scenario at a lot of business events because for business casual lunches, it's not uncommon that you've got a level of service where you're seated at a table, but the napkins are wrapped around the silverware and they're handed to you. It's not an uncommon construction for restaurants, particularly around a casual or a more casual lunch service these days. And
even like country club like spaces, though. I mean, having worked as a server at a country club, I made a lot of those roll ups. So even sometimes in not just casual dining, you can find that construction.
Absolutely.
Which is a little surprising.
And the angle that I'm often taking or that I usually find myself using is that, okay, now you know what to do. You can unwrap your napkin. You can set your utensils down and you know where to put them. You know where they go and that napkin goes in your lap. But I completely understand the thinking that says they give it to you in a roll. It's not designed to be set on the table and we might not be wiping these tables down. They might not be the cleanest tables. We're not thinking about it like that. And I think in a more casual dining experience, Anonymous has given me a new and very sensible way to think about this. I think particularly if the table doesn't look clean, if you're not wanting to put your utensils on it, I think what is being suggested here is very reasonable.
I think so too. And while we often say that you put your napkin in your lap just to protect yourself at this, it's sort of a signal of the meal and the time at the table beginning. We're going to focus on each other. It's not really going to help if like an iced tea tips over towards you and the whole thing is about to go in your lap. Let's be honest and practical about that. But the idea is that it is there a little bit in a protection position. And I just, again, like Dan, as I'm thinking about the casual dining scenario, I'm just not so worried about it. I think that the procedure Anonymous is talking about would be perfectly fine, and I'm not finding fault with it. And I'm laughing at how it never occurred to me that the table I might be putting my newly unwrapped silverware onto might be dirty. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is one of those where it's like very familiar, like question, circumstance, and you just showed me a way to answer that a little differently and accommodate a few more people. Thank you.
Because it's me, I was trying to think of some way I could hold the line that I could say, no, I really wouldn't just let it sit on the table and then wait and tuck in when the food arrives. If it was a situation where I was with someone who was senior to me or I was really someone's guest, I would probably look to follow their cues. But that is embedded in the question. We have a or follow your host's lead. And I'm guessing that Anonymous is pretty aware that if the stakes were such that you really wanted to be modeling your behavior or mapping off your host, that you would do that in that situation.
Anonymous, you asked the question, but could this advice change with a napkin-wrapped silverware roll? And the answer is yes. Thank you for expanding our thinking a little bit about it.
Notice now how she is spreading her napkin. Is that correct? What of Bob's way of opening his napkin and tucking a corner in his belt? Could that be all right? Bernie and Helen seem quite certain of the way they open their napkins and place them in a half fold in their laps. They seem to be really at ease.
Our next question is titled Childless by Choice. Hello, Lizzie and Dan. I am a huge fan of the show, and I love telling people that one of my hobbies is etiquette, including listening to podcasts and reading about Emily Post's timeless guides and rules. I have friends come to me with questions or to check their own understanding of etiquette constantly, and it is truly a joy. I am a married 29-year-old, and my husband and I are child-free by choice. We are delighted aunt and uncle to three nieces, nephews, who play significant active roles in our lives. I am very active in local and regional professional circles, wherein I meet and socialize with new people of all ages, backgrounds, and geographies almost daily. I am constantly asked if I have kids or want kids. I, of course, know this is impolite. The person asking is almost always from a kind place, often asks in the flow of conversation, and is usually either someone older. I live in the Mid-South. It feels like they know I'm married and thus assume I do have or want to have kids. Or a peer with whom I've developed a kindling friendship beyond work. I usually answer with some version of a confident no. One full sentence followed by, "We have nieces that we love and spend a lot of time with." I hate the idea that I am apologizing or explaining my child-free status. I am very proud of it, and to help with the stigma of child-free women. I also believe it not to be my responsibility to comfort or ease the questioner when they're the one who asks something inappropriate. On the other hand, again, I'm not ashamed. I hate for the conversation to get awkward, and I do genuinely love talking about my nieces. What is the best way to answer and or lead the conversation when someone asks about children in a professional or quasi-professional setting? A sincere thank you for your attention to these questions, and thank you so much for all you do to keep etiquette alive. Sincerely, Sophia.
Sophia, we do have one room left in our block for the Train the Trainer program for this September. I'm just saying, for someone who not only wrote a very etiquette-y question, like, not because the subject is super etiquette, but just the way it's written, there's a lot of, like, CRH being taken into account here, a lot of five-step process happening around here, like... I'm just saying, Sophia, your hobby is definitely one that I think you are gaining expert status in. And we have a program. No, but I really, really appreciate you asking this question and asking it the way that you have. I deal with this all the time. I find an added complication being someone who did really want children and hasn't reached that point in life, but also might be starting to be very, like, grateful for not having reached that point. You know, like, it's a complicated issue back there, and at the same time, totally okay with where I'm at. Like, and like you, I don't always feel like I have to qualify it by bringing Dan's kids or my sister's kids into it to, like, say, I like kids, though. It's not that I don't like kids, you know what I mean? I can find myself saying things where there's this other person in my head going, what are you doing? You don't need to explain this. But I think you're confident. Confident no is often incredibly effective. I find that I just welcome giving people the space to figure out what to ask me next. You know what I mean? Or I choose to ask them a question after that. And I find that that tends to be really effective at allowing me to be present in the moment without making it a teaching moment or showing somebody something they didn't know. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't have to have all of that with it. It could just be like, you ask the question, I'll give the answer. No. And that's it. And move on. And it's whether I'm moving it on or they're moving it on. I find that to be, in my life at least, satisfying in a lot of circumstances. But I've also, Dan, especially like at that family reunion where I was meeting like new in-laws and stuff like that, the question of partner and kids came up all the time. And that was a place where I had more comfort level and just kind of like sharing how I got to the place that I'm at and what I think about it. And I felt like that could also be appropriate in that moment. And I find when I deliver that with confidence, even if it's a slightly like messy space that I'm sometimes occupy with it, that the other person, A, they don't feel, I would say, bad for asking the question, but I think they can both hear that that probably wasn't the answer they were expecting and just get a slice of someone else's life with this, that it's not all we get married and have kids, you know?
Lizzie Post, I don't want to stop you. You are speaking from personal experience, which is so much more relevant in so many situations. But you're walking through what I had sort of mapped out intellectually as my etiquette approach to the question. And like you, I started off by just thinking, Sophia, just etiquette gold stars for all of the care in this question. The subtle care, the awareness of other people, where they're coming from, what their intentions are, how you're responses are going to impact them.
What responsibility you have to anyone who's asking you a somewhat rude question, whether they're aware of it or not. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot in this question.
And being able to separate all those issues and really look at them independently and make good choices about them. It's just such excellent etiquette. And the other framing thought I have that I can't escape is that it's just a great big flag on the self-improvement front that this is a real thing, and kids are so exciting for a lot of people, and they're so central to how people locate other people and think about them and construct identities for them, and it's just
relate to them.
It's just not going to work for everybody, and as natural as that question might feel, and as innocent as that curiosity might be when it arises in someone, that the experience of pursuing that question, if someone hasn't invited you to, is potentially very fraught. And it has the potential to put someone else in an awkward and difficult situation, or just an awkward situation. And that's something we would all want to avoid if we could. So that's the self-reflective moment.
Totally.
Like you, I'm reminding myself that the no, that firm and confident no, is central to this, that you acknowledge the question and you reply to it directly. And that is giving someone the care and the good etiquette that is, I would say, almost required of you in some ways. It's really hard to just ignore a question, a sort of question response similar to the cut direct of intentionally ignoring the question. Just
right.
Giving the response is a courtesy. And from that moment, I, like you, Lizzie, wanted to give permission to let that stand, that it's not up to you to help someone else navigate that. I liked how you described giving someone else the room to figure out what they're going to ask next, or that didn't land in a way that developed into something and it's up to them to find something else.
Or that you could be the one to do it. Yeah. Oh, sorry.
Or it's perfectly fine for you to be the one that moves the conversation in a different direction, a direction that's more appropriate for everybody. I also think it's okay, sort of a third option, and to me, it related to your sort of family environment where you didn't mind talking a little bit more about your decision making and your thinking in life, that it's also okay to give someone your honest and genuine answer, not the answer that's going to smooth it over and make them feel better. But
right.
But without trying to sort of shock or disrupt someone, you can tell them how you think or how you feel about it. If that's something that you want to share, if you want to continue to play that role of helping to educate people, and if that etiquette experience is something that someone might take with them and learn a little something from by getting your honest reaction to that question, I think that's something that is open and available to you because they've asked the question. They've opened the door for you to do some of that as well.
And Dan, I know we've been talking about sort of more personal scenarios, and the question that Sophia had posed was in professional settings or settings where you aren't with someone who's as close. And that's where I personally tend to, when I'm with people who aren't close to me, I try to be a bit more generous, even though we recognize it's not a polite question. It is a really common question. And I try to not sort of let my frustration or my tolerance level boil over for that moment with those people. If it's my, you know, uncle who's asking me for the 15th time and he knows very well I am not going to have children or something like that, or that now is not, you know, that it's like a little different, right? Mm-hmm. We can have a conversation about that, uncle, and how it makes me feel to be repeatedly asked. But just so we're very clear, I do not have an uncle who does this to me. None of my family pressures me to have children. But I think in the professional context, even though what's being asked is inappropriate, I think you can still take that etiquette high road. And depending on the nature of the relationship, it might even be really important for you to try to take that etiquette high road in that moment. Maybe say, no kids in my life, and leave it at that. It doesn't have to be the no that then makes somebody question themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Your tone and goodwill and just the expression on your face can really carry the day. And I think it's possible to navigate a lot of different answers without letting that disapproval that is the thing that many people really chafe at or find deeply uncomfortable from really becoming a part of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And I think professionally that would probably be a goal of mine. You know, unless I was dealing with the jerk at the office, and then I might let him know. But I think that if it were, you know, at a mixer type event and we're trying to be on good behavior, trying to navigate an awkward situation well, to the best of our ability, I think that that would be the goal.
Sophia, thank you for being an advocate for etiquette and for Emily Post etiquette in your community. And thank you so much for sharing your question with us. We really hope the answer helps. Thank you for your questions. You can be just like these awesome folks and submit your next etiquette question or piece of feedback to ae@emilypost.com. You can also leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463.
Awesome Etiquette is a weekly part of our Emily Post Etiquette Substack. If you enjoy the show, sign up today at emilypost.substack.com. This is the best way to support our efforts at Emily Post, whether you choose the free or community member paid subscription with its ads-free version of this show and bonus content. It's an easy way to get the show, share conversations about episodes, learn more about etiquette, and stay up to date on all things Emily Post. To those of you who are already with us on Substack, thank you so much for your support. It's time for our Postscript segment where we dive deeper into a topic of etiquette. And today we had enough feedback to do another feedback postscript. Dan, what's our first piece of feedback this week?
This comes from a listener who asked about taking photos while fine dining. Hi there. I just wanted to follow up on the question I submitted. We ended up making reservations at a different restaurant, which was still fine dining, but less traditional. I had to email the restaurant in advance about something else, so I took Dan's wise advice and asked about photos as well. They said photos were fine, as long as we didn't use flash. We decided that we would wait and see what the vibes were. At the restaurant, we were seated on a beautiful patio, not very close to other guests, and the table next to us had phones out, so I felt comfortable taking photos. I'm glad I took photos, because we did a 9 to 10 course tasting menu.
Wow.
And the whole thing was a blur. Thanks again for your help. I've attached a few photos I took just for fun. Side note, but thought you might be interested, they did what I thought was a nice thing with the silverware. They brought the necessary silverware for each course and then removed it along with the dishware each time before the next course came out. I thought this was a really nice way of handling the service and removed any anxiety one might have about whether we're using the right fork or spoon for the course we were on.
I like that way, too. They do it a lot over in Italy in the area that we eat in, and I just find it so easy.
a feature of the continental style of dining.
Our next feedback is about the stay-at-home mom who asked about making business cards. Dear Awesome Etiquette Crew, thank you for helping make our world a bit more kind and pleasant. I just finished listening to episode 510. I have a few bits of feedback for the stay-at-home mom asking about cards for networking. First, I once heard an excellent answer for when someone asks a what do you question of a stay-at-home mom. I am socializing future citizens. Isn't that great? I do like that quite a bit. It's cheeky and fun.
Noble work. It's noble work.
I do very noble work. I do many things, some of them paid, some of them not. I also do a lot of networking. When I'm networking and get asked one of those where do you work questions, I answer with what I'm representing at that gathering. For instance, I might say, I do several things, but I'm here representing our local symphony. That provides a context for that interaction. I like that a lot. Finally, when it comes to a card, I think it makes sense for everyone to have a business-type contact card. My husband and I have one that lists our names, individual cell numbers, and joint email address. It often comes in handy. At rummage sales, we might offer a lower amount on a big-ticket item. If they don't accept it, we provide the card and ask them to contact us if the item doesn't sell and they want to talk about making a deal. We have provided the card to people we've met on vacation and clicked with. You never know when you might want to provide your contact information for someone, and a card just makes it easier. I print our contact cards at home on cardstock since we don't need anything fancy for their use. Again, thank you for all you do. Warm regards, Ray. All kinds of good stuff in that one.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the feedback, Ray.
Next comes a thank you for sample language we provided in episode 504. Dear Lizzie Post and Dan Post Senning, thank you for sample language provided in episode 504. That is not helpful. It will be my go-to.
That's the sample language.
It will be my go-to for expressing dissatisfaction at rude behavior with assertion and non-aggression. Kind regards, Danny.
I'm glad it works for you, Danny. And another piece of feedback we received about how to tip on a trip. Dear Awesome Etiquette, first, thank you for your always marvelous advice. Your advice to the traveler heading for Normandy caught my attention as I have just returned from a very similar trip where I, as a travel professional, escorted 35 guests. I would like to add a bit of information that might be helpful to future travelers. Initially, the most important piece of advice is to contact the travel company directly and ask them specifically what are typical gratuities offered to each person in each role. They may not state a dollar amount on their website or in their printed materials, but they will have very accurate feedback for the guest when asked. The second suggestion is to keep in mind the difference between a bus driver and a tour guide, especially in Europe. European tour guides are usually highly trained professionals who invest years of their lives in educating themselves and who often must pass stringent government exams. This allows them to provide the best information to their guests and to be prepared to answer in-depth questions on a variety of topics. While drivers are also professionals, it's not the same level of education nor depth of service. Typically, driver gratuities are approximately half of that of a tour guide. I hope this additional information will be helpful to other travelers in the future. Marina.
Marina, thank you so much. That is very helpful. And it's always nice to get just a little bit of math in a piece of feedback. About half of this one for that one. It can be a really useful marker for people. We also received more feedback about tipping on a restaurant gift card. Good morning. I wanted to provide feedback regarding restaurant gift cards. Many restaurants do not allow the balance of a gift card to pay the tip. This is because when the gift card is purchased, the money received gets recorded in the financial accounting as gift card income. Any remaining balance of gift card is then kept on the gift card, or the customer may be issued a new gift card for the remaining balance, either manually written or electronically if a card. Example, $100 gift card, the total bill comes to $50, the restaurant will issue a new gift card for $50 to the customer. I worked in the restaurant industry for many years, and this is always the policy. The only exception to this policy was if the remaining balance was under $10, cash was issued for the remaining balance. Your recommendation to provide cash for the tip is an awesome idea. Thank you. Let me know if you have any questions. Have a fabulous weekend. Warm regards, Leanne.
Leanne, I'm so glad that that resonated. We also have this general piece of feedback about language to use when someone has died. Dear Lizzie and Dan, though I've had a few questions answered over the years for which I am thankful, I write now not with a question, but about a vocabulary matter with theological consequence. My suggestion is that you not use the word past regarding someone who has died. Its use suggests change from one state or place of being to another. We passed through Philadelphia on our way from D.C. to New York. Past diverts from transparency and candor about the loved one's severe loss, vacuum, sadness, grief. I don't know world religions other than my own, but in Christianity, there is no problem with the verb die and the noun death. I ask that you pare back from past and employ died so that the grieving can be more transparent about their loss and, regarding manners and etiquette, nudge those who love and care about the grieving to step up to help them in their sadness. I think I remember an episode long ago when you recommended that, in speaking of a death, we not console the grieving with something like, they're in a better place. My suggestion simply continues that recommendation in verb choice regarding death. Sincerely, Martin. One, I am a Christian theologian. My husband and I were raised Catholic, and we were married and practice in a Lutheran community. Two, my own faith was changed dramatically when I read Ernst Becker's The Denial of Death in college, and have been alert about the vocabulary and metaphors of death since then.
Martin, thank you so much for this thoughtful feedback. I'm definitely going to take that in. And I am, I think, often the guilty culprit using the term past, and I will pay more attention to how I use that word moving forward. And I will try to challenge myself to look at where my discomfort with the words die and death come from. I really appreciate this feedback. And you're pairing it with the idea of our previous recommendation that we don't try to console somebody with a thought that is a platitude. And that really helped me understand the point that you were driving at.
On Substack, we got this comment about the person who didn't want to reveal dietary restrictions to coworkers. Great episode as always. Dan and Lizzie did a very thoughtful and compassionate deep dive on the question about the allium intolerance. But I had one thing I wanted to mention. I know there are lots of reasons why the question asker might feel uncomfortable bringing up their dietary restriction. But just in case it's part of it, I wanted to explicitly state that it's not rude to share that info, particularly in a business setting. The person ordering your food in any reasonable company wants to know how they can best accommodate you. That's part of their job, and being clear with them helps them do their job well. As Dan and Lizzie said, that accommodation could be a discreet heads up that you're bringing your own food. But maybe there's a place they can give a gift card for, or some other way they could help you. You should not have to go into vivid detail or give a long download on your medical information, but Dan and Lizzie's script is great and would probably benefit from a simple, I have a medical issue, or I have an allium intolerance, along with it. Again, I know not all workplaces are well organized around food, and it may very well be more hassle than it's worth to bring up the intolerance, but it's not rude if that's the major concern. I couldn't agree more.
And finally, we received more feedback about our discussion of those crescent-shaped salad plates. Hi, Lizzie and Dan. I'm a fairly new listener, and I love your podcast. As someone who asked for Emily Post's etiquette book as her birthday gift for my 12th birthday, I was particularly thrilled to discover that the two of you are keeping etiquette alive for the next generation. Bravo. Recently, I was listening to an episode from earlier this year where a listener talked about an antique or vintage crescent-shaped salad plate that just nestled next to a dinner plate. And I believe one of you said that you had some of those too, and they make great salad plates. I agree. That is a fabulous modern use for those dishes. Perhaps your listeners would have been interested to know that while handy as a salad plate, those are in fact fishbone dishes.
Oh.
Also very handy. And I love the submissions about manners in media. My personal favorite is from You've Got Mail. The context is spread out over several scenes, but it fully ingrained in my children to never introduce themselves to a stranger with just their first name. At their first meeting, he only introduces himself as Joe. At their second meeting, the characters Joe Fox, Tom Hanks, and Kathleen Kelly, Meg Ryan, bump into each other at a Christmas party where she reminds him of their previous meeting. Joe, right? It's Joe, isn't it? And he replies, "Are you Kathleen?" And then quickly walks away. Confused by his quick exit, she mutters, "Kathleen Kelly?" Then, at a later time, she reminds him of that meeting by saying, "Joe, just call me Joe," as if you were a stupid 22-year-old girl with no last name. "Hi, I'm Kimberly. Hi, I'm Janice." Don't they know you're supposed to have a last name? It's like they're an entire generation of cocktail waitresses.
Oh, no.
I've watched that scene countless times and laughed out loud each time. Keep up the great job. Sincerely, Debbie.
Well, Debbie, even Dan's reading of it has me laughing out loud. That's pretty funny. Oh, but thank you so much. We really appreciate the feedback. And it's great to have a handle on those crescent shaped plates. They have more purpose than I thought.
Learn something new every day. Thank you all so much for your feedback. Please do keep it coming.
It's time for our weekly etiquette challenge, and this week we suggest that you pay attention to your partings. Goodbyes are just as important as hellos, and we really want to remind you to not forget to say them, whether you're at the register, with your partner on the phone, or to the person at reception on your way out of the office. See how many goodbyes you can get in this week.
Before we end our show with an etiquette salute, we'd like to remind you of some options for helping to keep this show growing. You can share this episode with friends, family, coworkers, whoever you think would enjoy awesome etiquette. Sign up for a paid subscription to our Substack and get an ads-free version of the show plus bonus content. You can send in a question or a salute. We mean it when we say there is no show without you. And finally, engage our sponsors' products and services, especially the ones you hear us endorse personally. Links can be found on the show's homepage. Thank you for considering it. Your help really makes a difference.
We like to end our show on a high note, so we turn to you to hear about the good etiquette you're seeing and experiencing out in the world, and that can come in so many forms. And today, we have a salute from one of our favorite listeners, Gonzalo. Hey, Lizzie, Dan, and the team. Congratulations again on reaching 500 episodes, and thank you for creating a space where we can think about how to make the world better with consideration, respect, and honesty. I have an etiquette salute for my girlfriend, Jules. A couple of weeks ago, I had to go through a medical procedure, which involved sedation, meaning that on top of it being a bit scary, I also wouldn't be able to drive back home after it. Jules selflessly canceled work and social appointments to be with me before, during, and after this procedure, being incredibly supportive and caring. I could totally feel how her actions positively impacted my experience, and I can't thank her enough for it. Here's to my awesome girlfriend, Jules.
That's three such cheers nice for Jules.
I know. And Gonzalo, we hope you have recovered and recovered well. But just that's great. And we're also really glad there's someone awesome out there taking care of you.
Jules, thank you for taking care of Gonzalo. I really hope that you get to hear this salute. And Gonzalo, we hope that you have a quick recovery. And thank you so much for the salute.
Thank you for listening today. We appreciate everyone who sent something into the show. You really make awesome etiquette happen each week.
We also want to thank everyone who supports us via Substack. We're loving the conversations over there. Come on over and check it out.
Don't forget, we have a range of books that make for great gifts, and you can get signed copies through Bridgeside Books, as well as signed copies of our trivia game. Just visit emilypost.com. There's a link from our homepage.
Thanks again for listening. Our show this week is edited by Chris Albertine and produced by Claire Tregesser.
Thanks, Chris and Claire. Bye, everybody.
See you from the ranch.